Welcome. We're glad you've joined us for this Hand in Hand podcast. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we provide information, classes, training, and lots of support for parents like you. We call our approach Parenting by Connection, and it's based on the insight that you deserve good support as you parent, and every child needs lots of connection in order to thrive. We offer tools to help you foster support for yourself and connection in your family. We hope this podcast gives you exactly the kind of support you're looking for.
Good evening. This is Patty Whipster, and I'm the founder and the program director at Hand in Hand Parenting. And you've joined us for What If Giving Children Consequences Isn't Good Discipline After All? Long title for an evening, just an hour on consequences. What works with children and trying to help guide their behavior and what doesn't. And I'm very happy to be with you tonight. What I want to do for the first 3 minutes is to wait for the some 300 people, all who are going to be with us, to arrive. Not everybody is spot on time, and we understand that, and there's reasons why. So what I'd like to do is just tell you a tiny bit about hand-in-hand parenting while we're waiting, and just let you know that we're a nonprofit organization. We've been going, we're about to enter our 25th year, and we've been serving parents. Our goal, you know, one way to say it is that what we want is that every parent gets to put their head on the pillow at night and say, it was a hard day, there were a lot of challenges, and I did well. I left my children well today. We want parents to be able to be confident. We want them to feel connected with their children. We want parents to be pleased with how they're treating their children and pleased with how their children turn out. And what we do to help this happen is to offer some really good information about what we call parenting by connection, a parenting approach that puts the emphasis on building the parent-child connection, whatever age of the child. You can begin building it as soon as your baby is born, and you're still building it when your children are 20 and 25. Building and repairing, building and repairing, making sure that you and your child are in tune and in touch with one another, that you're enjoying one another, and that you're supporting one another, and really that you have the tools you need to smooth your child's way in the world, and your child has the care and the love from you that they are built to have so that they can learn eagerly and cooperate well and feel really pleased and excited about the lives that they have and the learning they get to do. So the way we do this is to offer free services like this podcast and like the almost 100 articles that we have on our website, and offering a blog and a discussion group, which has about 1,500 parents in it right now, all taking a look at parenting by connection and how to connect better and more frequently with our children so we're able to help them and we're able to feel pleased with who they are. And we also have fees for services. So the services we offer are one-on-one consultations and classes that you can take that are self-guided. They're videos and written materials that are about usually between 3 and 4 hours worth of teaching on particular topics. And then we offer our best class, our Building Emotional Understanding class, that helps parents understand their children's feelings and helps them relieve some of the stresses that get all bound up in them doing this hard work of loving our children well and trying to solve problems that are not always easy to solve. So we're offering support, we're offering information, and we're offering deep respect for you and the hard work you're doing as a parent. We know that parenting is most likely the hardest and the most challenging job that you've ever done, and also the one that you care by far the most about. And we want to support you in that job. So that's what we're doing at Hand in Hand. We are a nonprofit organization. We charge for our services that we offer are paid for only about half of the services we offer are paid for through the fees that parents pay for them. So I'm glad you're here, and I think I'd like to ask a couple of people to just say what it is that you're interested in learning tonight.
Hi there. I just joined in, and I'm eager to hear what you'll be discussing, and I think, you know, I'm open to learning anything I can.
Okay. Thanks for joining us. We'll see if we can give you some ideas to play with.
I'm hoping that we can find alternatives or ways we don't typically punish or anything like that, but when my oldest, my 8-year-old, continues to not listen, like doesn't follow through with just, I mean, she has very minimal chores and things to do. I look at him and say, I don't know what to do. What do we do now? We've reminded her, we've tried these other things, and what do we do? I don't know what to do.
Okay. I'll bring you some ideas.
Okay, and, great.
Yeah, and we will have questions. I'm going to try not to talk the whole time. I'm going to try to answer people's questions, so you can come back on if it didn't make it really clear to you. And maybe one more person.
Yeah, again, kind of echoing what the previous person has said about, you know, I feel like I'm good at empathizing and trying to be there, but when it kind of comes to that point of, like, something needs to be done and I don't want to punish and I don't want to do timeouts. And my husband especially comes from a very authoritarian family, and he's like, you know, she needs punishment, she needs discipline, and you know, I just don't know what to do.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you for the three of you for your contributions, just opening your minds and letting us all see in a very brief way how difficult this work of parenting is. Yikes. We get trained for lots of things, but we don't get trained or helped with this much. So, but I think what I want to do is to say that we, just to say a few of the insights that we work with at Hand in Hand Parenting, the insights that are the foundations of parenting by connection. One is that children are good. Children really want to be very close to us. They want to have a good time. They want to cooperate. And their given nature, the nature that they, you know, were born with, is to love and love well, to be generous, to want to include others, to be very, very thoughtful of others. Children are really built to be highly social, highly sensitive, highly in tune beings. They aren't all that way all the time. And there's a reason for that. When children get hurt, when they don't feel safe, or they've had scary or traumatic or difficult things happen, when they haven't been able to connect well enough with the grown-ups who are trying to love them well, for one reason or another, maybe they've been ill and they've been stuck in the hospital. You know, maybe they're at daycare and the daycare worker is got a bad cold, and so for 2 weeks she's not really paying attention to children, although she usually can. You know, there are reasons why children kind of get hurt or can't find the emotional anchoring that they need, the powerful adult attention that needs to surround them so that they feel safe and welcome and seen and cherished. When children can't find that, their minds lock down, and outcome behaviors that are really not very workable, behaviors that are not thoughtful of others, behaviors that are repetitive, behaviors that are harsh, behaviors that are self-defeating. And this can happen to babies. This can happen to 5-year-olds. This can happen to 15-year-olds. And it certainly happens to us as parents when we're not well supported and we don't, you know, we've had too long and too hard of a day or too long and too hard of a week. We lose our sense of connection and our sense that anybody cares about us. What happens is that, you know, off-track behaviors pop out in us too. And it's really hard to think when that happens. It's hard to think when you're a child and you don't feel well enough connected. And it's very difficult to think when you're a grown-up and you're being faced with a difficult or an off-track or just a wild and woolly behavior that doesn't make much sense and isn't very workable. If you're upset on the inside and you don't feel well enough supported, it's really hard to think. It's really hard to come up with any solution other than the solutions that your parents came up with, whatever those were. And some of us have had parents who just went, oh, whatever, hopefully they won't kill each other. I've got to leave the room. I can't watch this. And they just left us to our own devices, giving us no guidance and no help. You know, they just kind of walked away. Others of us had parents who swooped in and were, you know, brought all kinds of, you know, loud noise and punishment and consequences and, you know, all kinds of difficult interactions that, for the most part, also didn't help. It's like it certainly stopped whatever it was going on, but what they brought was a storm that was, you know, brewing in a much bigger person, and we then had to deal with that. So the difficulty is that although we love one another and we're built to love one another and to be in very close contact and very close, you know, understanding of one another, there are things that scare us, things that set off feelings that we carry inside of us that can really cloud our thinking. And when our thinking is clouded, we just don't do that well with each other. And the next insight that we have is that rather than punishments or rewards, which fool around with the externals of children's behavior, you know, if you do this, then I will do that, you know, and the that that we will do is either, you know, wonderful. It's like, if you be quiet right now and don't bother your sister, I'll give you a cookie. Or it's, you know, meant to discourage the behavior. You know, if you can't let, you know, leave your sister alone, then you're going to have to spend 5 minutes in your room all by yourself. But in either of those directions, what we're doing is trying to use our greater power, our greater size, and our ability to physically command a child's obedience to influence their behavior. And what studies show is that children don't really learn from these interactions. And the more you bribe a child for the behavior that you have selected as good, the less interested children become in that behavior. They might do it, but their hearts aren't in it. And the more you bribe or the longer you bribe, the bigger the bribes have to be, and the more you kind of take the heart out of the child, because you're actually paying attention to their external behavior. You're not looking inside to see who they are, what they need, how they feel, and you're kind of not taking your relationship with them into account. So that's another insight. And the third one is that when you connect with a child who can't think very well, whose behavior has gone off track, when you bring an offer of connection, you get in close and you offer to listen and you make eye contact and you don't bring a lot of bluster, you know, you don't bring, no, 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 don't you do that again, you know, you don't bring that, you just move in and you stop the behavior and you bring yourself open, ready to listen, but you bring a limit as well if need be or an expectation, then because your child can't think, and you're offering connection, what will happen is that they will unload all the feelings that were actually causing this off-track behavior. And this is very, very helpful. So the healing factor of your presence, the limit that you set, and the listening that you're willing to do allows a child to tantrum or cry or laugh or, you know, tell you how scared they are. Sometimes they scream and throw themselves on the floor and just have a huge fit, all of which has been interpreted by our parents and often by us as another form of misbehavior, maybe the worst form of misbehavior. But that impression is mistaken. Like, offloading big feelings gives children a chance to be heard and to get emotional tension out of their way, so that they can reconnect with us. So what we do is we offer connection and the child unloads bad feelings until they can receive the connection that we offer. And at that point, they're able to think much, much better. And in general, the off-track behavior that they were engaged in disappears. And they become someone who can listen, someone who's in tune, someone who is just fine about doing whatever it is that they were upset about doing or not having whatever it is they were upset about because you wouldn't let them have. It doesn't matter anymore because what they got was a connection with you, which is really the most valuable thing that we can ever bring our children, is connection and time and attention connected with us. So we offer listening tools to help parents replace the tools of rewards and punishments. And I kind of want to go through in a little bit more detail the reason that punishment in particular, consequences, I think, they are dressed up nowadays, you know, logical consequences or natural consequences as a thing that you do to help your child understand that certain behaviors are just not, you know, not good to pursue, are really kind of a dolled up version of punishment. They are not physical punishment, and that's a big advance. It's like most of, I know I certainly was brought up with physical punishment and the threat of physical punishment, and it was hauled out daily, in order to try to control the behavior of me and my five siblings. And this has been, you know, it's endemic in our society and in many societies, not all, but many. And so consequences is kind of a tamed down punishment light where what you do is that you say, you know, if you can't stop tapping your pencil, I'm going to have to take your pencil away. You know, that's supposedly a logical consequence. It's the definition of logical consequences, according to Dreikers, the guy who sort of invented the idea or wrote about the idea, is that it's relevant to the behavior that you're trying to stop, that it is related to that behavior, that it is moderate in kind. It's, you know, reasonable in by the lights of the grown-ups anyway. Some grown-up thinks it's reasonable. And it's respectfully offered. So you try to look like a calm person while you're offering the consequence. I'm going to take your pencil away. And I'm sure there's a little bit of tone to it, and there's a little bit of edge to it. It's like, you know, because you are using your power as a grown-up. You know, and what happens is that you're relating to a child as one would relate to a dog. You're using your power. You're using your height and your weight and the fact that you know a whole lot more about how the world works. And you're using a very top-down relationship model where I'm the decider and you deal with what I decide. And this doesn't really take children's minds or their hearts into consideration. And so the results of logical consequences, which are always adult-decided, adult-directed, and adult-enforced, they don't take the child into consideration. I think the nod to consideration is that you warn a child what the consequence is going to be before you issue the consequence. So they have a, quote, choice, unquote, which I don't, you know, it's like by the time you're warning your child, you're already telling them, I don't like you and I don't like your behavior. So you're already kind of separating yourself off from your child, which is, because of the way children are built, already scary to children. So the fact that you're warning means already that the feelings that they were having that were driving the off-track behavior in the first place, the bad feelings stuck inside of them, are going to increase because now they see an adult who's trying hard not to be angry but not covering it all over, and that the threat of anger is on its way. Children know when the threat of anger is on its way, and it scares them. So in a way, what you're doing when you deliver your warning about logical consequences is you're scaring your child more and making it less likely that they will be able to think well about the consequence that you just announced. And they'll be more likely to be unable to cooperate with whatever it is that you are forcing them to do. So the results of this kind of thing, punishment, whether it's logical consequences or timeout or, you know, a physical slap on the butt, is that, first of all, makes people mad. You know, people get angry when there's a punishment, when they are punished. It models the use of power, like you have to be a powerful person in order to make someone do something. And if you are a powerful person, it is just fine to make someone do something if you decide that it's important to you. Not quite the model that we want to give our children if we want them to get along with others, if we want them to succeed in life, they're going to have other tools than just throwing their weight around in the world. It loses effectiveness over time. It's like, you know, you need a bigger and bigger bribe or a bigger and bigger punishment to intimidate a child into doing what you want them to do over time. And by the time your child is, you know, 12 or 13 or 14, they have been manipulated by you enough that they make an internal decision inside themselves. You know, I'm never going to let him or her, you know, do this to me again. And you've lost them. You can get them back, but, you know, they're lost to you because you've been dealing from a position of power and you haven't been looking inside them to see what is it that's causing them to go off track. You know, why don't they feel good enough to cooperate? Why don't they feel good enough to sit with us at dinner time? You know, why don't they feel good enough to get their homework and not procrastinate until 10 o'clock at night? Using punishments and consequences, because it uses a top-down power model that doesn't include children's thinking or children's ability to think, erodes our relationship with them. We basically are not showing them the respect that we show thinking beings, because we decide everything. We decide what the consequences are. We decide when they will be delivered and how they will be delivered, and they have no say. And it distracts kids from real issues. You know, if the consequence for, you know, pestering your sister is that you don't get to, you know, ride your bike this afternoon, that really puts your child's attention on wanting to ride their bike when actually you really want them to have a better chance to get along with their sister. So all of a sudden it's about the bike rather than getting along. So it puts attention on all the wrong things when you're actually trying to help people get along. And it makes kids more self-centered. It brings kids into seeing, what can I get out of this? You know, what will you give me if I stop bothering my sister? It sort of, it basically pulls their attention into an economy of rewards and punishments, which you are the one that started that economy, and they're the ones that now participate, and it works your relationship into one that's all about, you know, you give me this and I'll give you that, and really pulls attention away from love. It sort of makes kids much more materially centered. When who we are as human beings is people who want to play and get along and learn and have good, exciting times solving really interesting problems in the world. So I that little list of the negative effects of punishment comes straight from Alfie Cohen, who has written some really good books on this subject. And his thinking is very aligned with ours at Hand in Hand. Unconditional Parenting is the shorter book on the benefits of regarding children highly and connecting with them whenever you can, and using connection as your paradigm for parenting rather than rewards and punishments. We have some listening tools that he doesn't offer that I think are, you know, take one more step to help parents know, okay, I can figure out what not to do. You know, punishments and consequences have these deleterious effects. So what do you do instead? Here's what we think. What you want to do is to just know and understand that anytime your child's behavior is off track, they are being driven by bad feelings. And anytime you can't figure out how to connect with them, anytime your child's behavior stumps you, the first thing to do is to really take a look at getting help for yourself. Because what aids a child who can't think is a parent who can think. What doesn't aid a child who can't think is lots of interaction with a parent who can't think and is therefore flailing around trying this and trying that and you know, worried or upset or angered by the child's behavior. It's like that complicates the problem. So the idea is that we are in relationship with our children all the time. It's not just their behavior. It's, you know, what the difficulty is, how their behavior works on us. What happens inside of us when they bite another child? What happens inside of us when they mope in the corner and won't participate in, you know, in family dinner? They don't want to come to the table. You know, what happens inside of us when they just can't calm down? They're just, you know, bouncing off the walls and cannot relax. So when you're stumped by your child's behavior, you have to notice, I am stumped. This is a very important fact. It's like you are part of the equation, not just your child. It's your child and you. This is the behavior your child has because there's some kind of hurt or upset or bad experience that's niggling inside of them and that has shut their mind down to connecting with others well. And now there's something niggling inside of you and that has shut your mind down to connecting well with your child. So your reactive behavior won't help. What will help? So Hand in Hand has a listening tool for this. We call it listening partnerships. And what this is you, we have a little booklet on it. Within about 6 weeks, we will have a self-guided video on how to set up a listening partnership. Our experience over the last 40 years is if you can find someone who will listen to you, talk about how your child's behavior bugs you, how hard it is to not know what to do as a parent. I don't know how anybody expects, how we expect ourselves to know what to do every minute of every day when we've never been parents before. Now, we were parents of a 3 3/4-year-old, you know, last week, but now we're parents of a 3 3/4-year-old plus 1 week child, and they have new problems that we have not faced before. So, of course, we don't know what to do. We need listening time to sort of sort ourselves out, to offload the feelings that we feel like venting at our children so that we can reclaim our ability to think when that behavior pops up in front of us. When we can think, then we've got tools we can use to connect with our child. So the first tool is notice when you don't know what to do. Notice when your child has just aggravated you to the nth degree. Find a listener. Have a 5-minute tirade over the phone with your listener, or have a good half hour to talk about the whole thing in detail, you know, after the children have gone to bed over the phone with a listener. Cry if you need to. Laugh if you need to. Do whatever you need to get your own mind going again, to get the bad feelings out of the way so the thinking can happen. So that's one very important tool to help us figure out what else to do besides rewards and punishments, consequences, timeouts, or trying to, you know, have patience, and then finally you just don't have any anymore and you blow up. You know, that's kind of the fallback position is, I won't be hard on my child, I won't be hard on my child, I won't be hard on my child, and then kaboom, you just can't help yourself. Listening partnerships are to curb that phenomenon, to give you an outlet that isn't your children, some other grown-up who can listen to you. So a quick anecdote, one of our new instructors had a 2-year-old, and he was starting to slap, you know, just little toddler slaps, but she was having a big reaction, and she noticed, just, my kid is 2 years old, I don't know what to do, I don't want him to go around slapping people, and he's not slapping anybody else, he's just coming up and slapping me. I have no idea why he's doing this, what is going on, but I feel like throttling him. I just want to grab that kid and shake. You know, she's kind of noticed, oh my gosh, you know, these are little two-year-old slaps, and I'm having this huge, furious reaction. And she had never done a listening partnership before, but she found somebody, you know, asked them to listen to her. And within about 10 minutes, she'd figured out, oh my gosh, my brother used to beat me up when I was a kid. He hurt me every single day of my childhood. Nobody ever helped. I'm furious. And she cried and cried and cried at having been left alone to deal with her older brother's aggression, all being taken out on her and with no help in sight. And after she'd had a good half-hour cry, you know, she kind of pulled herself back together and went back. And her child's little, you know, toddler slaps were just no problem for her after that. And she used other listening tools to help him with this weird little behavior pattern that he had gotten caught in, which wasn't going to serve him well, you know, if it radiated out to other people besides her. And within about a month, he wasn't slapping anymore, and she wasn't furious anymore. She had figured out where her feelings came from and worked on them. So I think the second thing I want to say is that children do need limits. We are not a permissive parenting approach. We don't have a permissive parenting approach. We say, get in, bring the limit, bring it early, bring it often. Don't talk about the limit. Don't stand 5 feet away and say, don't do that, or you'd better come here right now. Don't issue demands. Don't issue orders. Children who can't think cannot process verbal communication. They can't, they're out of communication with you. You know, if they are pulling the dog's tail, if they are throwing food on the floor and they're over 18 months old or 2 years old, they know you don't like it. You know, if they are fighting with one another, if they are grabbing stuff from other children, if they won't refuse to do their homework, they can't think. It's not because they're bad. They just can't think. They do not feel connected. Not being able to think and not feeling connected are one and the same phenomenon. And the remedy is connection. So, but in order to be able to feel you there, you have to stop the netty behavior. If you say stop, you know, they'll look at you straight in the eye and they'll do the netty behavior with 20% more effort, 20% more energy, because they're trying to signal you, I can't think. The netty behavior is a signal. So what you do is you just walk over to the child and you put your arm around them and you say no, and you look them in the eye. And maybe you say, sweetie, I can't let you do that. Or maybe you say, no more cookies. Or maybe you say, come here, and you pull them onto your lap. And that's all you say. You do not lecture. You do not tell them your, you know, why they shouldn't do what you do. You do not tell them, I'm going to tell you for the third time, you need to X, Y, Z. They cannot process what you say. You just bring the limit. You give them eye contact. And you allow them to notice how they feel. We call this stay listening. So you bring the limit, and then you stay listen. And what will happen is the emotional tension that was driving them nuts, that drove them into whatever this unworkable behavior was, will blurt out. So you might get lots of laughter. And it's not disrespectful. They're not trying to anger you further. They're just offloading fear. Laughter offloads light fear and embarrassment. You know, you're bringing your attention, and that's what needs to pop out. More often, you'll get tantrums, you'll get tears, you'll get storming around, you'll get a child who is very, very unhappy. And that unhappiness is coming out of the child. It was that unhappiness that was causing the problem in the first place. And as soon as your child begins to express it, there's a healing process going on, and you are a very important part of that process. So you stay and you listen, and they tell you that you're the worst daddy in the world. They tell you that you are so mean. They might, if they have words, you know, they might tell you that they hate you and you're ugly. But as long as they're crying, and as long as they're, or maybe sweating or trembling, it's like crying, sweating, trembling, having a tantrum, you know, throwing what my parents would call throwing a fit. All of this offloads emotional tension. And what you do is you offer connection, you offer caring, you offer listening, and your listening will pour in while their bad feelings pour out. That's the healing action. Like, if you can stay present for all of this, you just hold that limit. You know, you don't let them go back and ride the trike that they grabbed from somebody else. You know, you don't let them have that second cookie. No matter how long they cry for it, you just go, I know you want that cookie, and I'm not going to let you have it. You do not lecture about sugar. You do not lecture about sharing. You do not lecture about how you need to treat your sister better than that. You just let them pour their feelings out, because they can't hear your lecture, and they need to concentrate on how they feel. And once you've received all these feelings and you've listened and you've connected, you'll have a child who can think again. It's a really remarkable process, and it allows children to feel our caring. And it allows them to cooperate again without you having to force anything. So bringing a limit rather than saying the limit, getting over to your child. So, for instance, my grandson, I have two grandchildren that are the quite close to me, and they live close, so I see them a lot. And there was one day when my grandson was making fun of my granddaughter. You know, he's older, and he was going, yin, 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 yeah, from the side of the room, over in the corner of the room, just basically teasing her the way school kids do. And, you know, rather than saying, you know, anything, I just kind of went on my hands and knees so I wouldn't be sort of intimidating. I just kind of crawled on my hands and knees over, he's 11, by the way, crawled on my hands and knees over to him, and I just said, come here, you goofball. You know, and pulled him into my lap and gave him a noogie on his head, and he laughs and laughs and starts trying to get away. I say, no, no, you're the goofball, you come over here. You know, and just giving him more attention, and a pretty good, what we call a vigorous snuggle, you know, so that he would then be, connecting with me. Like, if he was going to be hard on somebody, it would be me. you know, every once in a while I would slow down. I wouldn't be giving enough, you know, enough of a pretend, you know, playful response to him. And he'd go, nya-nya-nya-nya-nya. And they'd go, oh, no, the goofball's at it again. And I'd pounce on him some more. And just he'd laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh. And after you wrestle around with a child enough, they feel connected. They've laughed. You've looked one another in the eye, and you've been amazed when they do that goofy thing again. You can, you know, thump on them again playfully, you know, not so hard that you hurt anybody, but you just do playful protest, playful something. And they laugh and they laugh and they laugh, and, you know, 5 minutes later, they can actually, you know, connect and not be mean and think of what would be fun to do together. So, that's what we call the playful snuggle. It's part of play listening, the play listening response. So the tools that we offer in general, instead of, you know, logical consequences or punishment or storming around like an angry grown-up, are four. I already talked about two, bringing the limit and then stay listening for all the big, hard feelings that pour out after you've brought the limit. There are another two. One is special time, which is just connecting with a child, letting them decide what you do for a distinct period of time. So I'm going to give you 5 minutes of special time. Let's do that. You know, so you can move in on a child who's pestering their sibling and just say, oh, special time, you know, let's do what you want to do. And can you hang in here for, you know, you say to the other child, can you hang in here for 5 minutes? I'm going to take your sister and we're going to do special time. And you just reconnect. And this looks to people who are really, who believe in behaviorism, you know, the whole idea that you don't reward, you know, off-track behavior. You want to punish off-track behavior. It looks to them like you're rewarding, you know, bad behavior. What you're really doing is you're trying to enable a child to think. And when they can think, you're trusting that they're going to be able to be a decent sibling or be a learner, be able to do their homework, whatever the difficulty of the moment is, they'll be able to tackle it if they've got their mind. And you're trying to connect so that they can retrieve their ability to think. And sometimes there's laughter associated with that. Sometimes there's not. But if you can connect, they will be able to think. And the last one is play listening. It's like getting laughter going, because laughter is a very, very powerful parent-child connector. So I'm going to tell you a few stories here of just how this works, and then I'll ask for some questions. So one example is, it's on our blog. It's a little story called How to Enjoy Piano Practice. And it's told by a mom who has a 9-year-old son, and he takes piano lessons, and he liked piano lessons. But for some reason, he just decided he didn't want to practice anymore. He wasn't going to practice anymore, and he just stopped practicing. And so he was having lessons, but he wasn't getting very far. And the mom was reflecting that she was never asked, did she want lessons? You know, she had to have lessons, and it was, you know, her performance was required. And so she kind of got some listening time about, you know, what was she forced to do when she was her, you know, her son's age, and had a chance to look at, am I forcing my son to do something he doesn't like? But she kind of thought, well, but he used to like it, and then for some reason he doesn't like it anymore. So I think probably, you know, there must be something in his way of practicing, because he actually liked piano. So I'm going to read you her story now. So at home, she says, I asked my son if it was okay for us to talk about piano lessons. My son reluctantly agreed, okay. I tried my best to keep from saying, if you can't practice, you should stop taking lessons, which is what my mom would say to me when I was small. I sat down next to him, looked him in the eye, and asked as calmly as I could what I could do to help him practice every day. My son started complaining about how his younger brother was bothering him, or how it was unfair that his brother could play when he had to practice. I listened and resisted the urge to say things like, that's not true. I asked him gently again, what help do you need? I'm sure you can do it. This made my son really upset, and he answered, you can just shut up and be quiet. Go away. I responded, I really want to figure out a way to help you practice. I'm sure you can practice. I held my ground, but at the same time wondering if I was still motivated by my own upset at him not practicing, Or was I now offering a kind of real support at last? I chose an attitude of listening and giving confidence to him rather than lecturing and trying to change him. I thought, he knew what he was supposed to do, and he actually liked to do it, but he just couldn't for some reason. My son was soon crying. He cried hard, saying it was unfair and it was all my fault. I checked on my younger son, who saw that it was fine in the same room with us. I saw he was fine in the same room, quietly doing other things. So I kept on stay listening to my older son's feelings. He cried, sitting down next to the piano keyboard with me at his side. After about 15 minutes, I needed to take care of other things, and he wasn't crying hard anymore. So I told him I was going to have to move on, and I got up. To my surprise, he started practicing piano on his own soon after I left his side. I couldn't believe it. Since that evening, he has practiced piano most every day, sometimes starting on his own, other times with my encouragement, which had never worked before. Piano practice didn't feel like a dreaded chore anymore. Something was lighter. I could tell that my son was playing because he liked it and he wanted to. Seeing this changed the way I think about music, too. I stopped saying, it's time to practice your piano, and started saying, I want to hear your music. Can you play? I can see that I was able to help him work through whatever was in the way of him enjoying music practice. So that's an example of how you use listening tools and faith in your child's mind and faith in the power of the support you can offer when you move in and bring an expectation or a limit, and then allow your child to bounce their feelings off of that. So there's one more anecdote that I'll try to summarize pretty quickly, and then I'll ask for questions. So this is from a mom, a single mom actually, of a 7.5-year-old girl, and her child was, it was the morning time, and the mom said, you know, I'd like you to pick up your room. And she said, okay, I will, but I want to watch a little TV first. And the mom said, okay, you can pick up later if you'd like. And her daughter watched TV and then didn't want to clean her room. And the mom reminded her of their agreement, and she said she didn't want to. And the mom just sat there and said, you know, thought, well, she must not be feeling very connected, and there must be some upset inside of her. And what she needs is some listening and some connection. And I don't want to get into a power struggle with her. I do want to listen. So the mom says, I sat next to her on her bed and listened as she complained about cleaning her room. She got up from her bed and stormed around her room, telling me all the reasons she couldn't do it and didn't want to do it. As I listened, her tone escalated. She told me I couldn't make her clean her room and that she didn't have to. Staying calm, I just kept my focus on listening to her. It can be easy to jump into the lecture, but I reminded myself to focus on really hearing her and allowing her to express all she needed to say. I knew that if I said much at this point, she wouldn't really be able to hear me anyway. It didn't take long before I noticed that her tone started to calm and she relaxed next to me. When she seemed finished, I told her that she was right. She didn't have to clean her room, and I wasn't going to make her. This caught her interest, and I had her full attention. Then I told her, since we had made an agreement, I would like her to keep it. I let her know that trusting a person's word is an important quality to me. If she chooses not to keep her agreement, that's her choice, and that choice would influence my making further agreements with her because I'll know that she doesn't always keep her agreements. I let her know that it really was her choice, and I gave her a hug and a kiss. Then I went on with what I needed to do to get ready for the day. When I walked back to her room about 5 minutes later, I noticed that she was cleaning up her room, and she seemed quite happy with herself, too. And then the mom adds at the end, she says, I see that my daughter is learning from these moments. Recently, when I was reluctant to negotiate on something with my daughter, she looked at me earnestly, and she said, Mom, I keep my agreements. I nodded, smiling, and I said, yes, you do. And together we found something that worked for both of us. So what you want to do, rather than have rules and consequences and get all legalistic with your child, is you want to pay attention to the fact that this is a good person. This is a reasonable person who at this moment can't think, and they need some connection. You can provide that connection as long as you can think. And if it's a behavior that just drives you out of your mind, then it's time to find a listening partner so that you can offload your feelings about that behavior, so that the next time it pops up right in front of you, you'll have a better chance of thinking. And when you can think, and remember that your child is good, then really good things happen between you. Then you've got a relationship and you can work that relationship for the benefit of you and your child. So if you have a question about this, let me know and I'll try to answer some questions here before we close.
Hi. Well, my question is, I hear what you're saying and I think that, you know, I definitely am willing to try that and I think that would definitely work. My concern is that my oldest child, she's my stepdaughter, she's here all during the week and just one weekend. One of the things she's asked to do is take her clothes from her mother's when she returns from the weekend and just put them in a bag. And this is something that she doesn't follow through with. But and I could certainly do with what that mother did with cleaning up the room. But the way that she tends to deal with things that bother her is she shoves everything down. She doesn't really express how she feels. Even if I try to encourage her, she just sort of says nothing or will just, you know, she might just, you know, get it done and then that's it after, you know, if I bring it up to her, something like that. I don't quite know how to repair that in her.
Okay. A good place to start, and it's stepchildren are in relationship with someone, probably you, if you're the stepmother, that they didn't choose. And this is hard on anybody. And you could be Mother Teresa, but still be resented by a child because of the lack of choice there. You know, you were brought into her life by her dad, but not by her. And there's all these feelings about, you know, the separation and the family disruption that get attached onto, you know, the step-parent-step-child relationship. So what I would suggest is just that this situation where she stuffs her feelings and can't express them, and therefore you don't, you know, there's not much way to build a safer relationship, can really be remedied quite well by special time. So what you do is, you know, maybe once a week or maybe even, you know, 10 minutes a day, depending on what works for you, or 10 minutes on Tuesday and Wednesday nights when, you know, Daddy will do the dishes instead of you. You set up an agreement with her and you say, you know, I will do whatever you like to do. What would you like to do? And you let her cook up what happens. And maybe she wants a back rub. You know, maybe she wants you to braid her hair a certain way. Maybe she wants to be read to. Maybe she doesn't know what she wants to do. So what she does is, you know, lay there and go, I have no idea what I want to do. I don't want to do anything. And she tells you that for 10 or 15 minutes. Whatever happens, you know, what your job during this special time is to be pleased with her. Now, maybe she wants to start a game of, you know, a game and then cheat. So you lose and she wins. But whatever it is, you just be pleased. You see if there's some laughter in the corners there and you try to promote that. But you just let her have these moments in time, you know, defined moments, you know, 10 minutes here, 20 minutes there, an hour on Saturdays, where it's all about what she wants to do with you and you are pleased and you're not trying to teach or give lessons or talk to her or bring up difficult subjects. You know, it's really all about what she wants. This is very, very helpful. And the way that you'll know that it's working is that all of a sudden, in a way, it's kind of like the benefits of this, one begins to doubt when it really does begin to work, because then children get huffier and they get testier and they do burst into tears and they tell you you're the worst person in the world and run off to their room and slam the door. And that's actually a good sign, not a bad sign, from a child who's been stuffing it all back in. So you kind of have to be ready for, you know, the feelings that come out. It's not going to be, hold my hand while I tell you how rough my life has been. It's going to be, you know, you lousy parent, you're not my mom, I don't want to be around you. And it's not going to come out in a way that is, you know, appealing on the outside. But what it gives you is a chance to really listen and to try to understand, you know, what these difficult feelings are that she's been alone with for however many years it's been since someone who's really listened to her. So that's where I would start.
Yeah. Thank you. I just have a quick follow-up question. Is it ever okay to suggest a special time or plan a special time. Like, I only have her, we only have her one weekend, so, you know, I sometimes I'm trying, like, I just tried to, you know, just take her out and get some, like, a hot chocolate or just something like that. Or
good for you. I would let it be up to her.
Okay.
And if after three or four special times it seems like she's just kind of piddling around and she's not taking advantage of the fact that you really will do just about anything she wants, then I would throw out some really nutty ideas. You know, like, you know, this special time you can do anything. Like, if you want to make mud pies and throw them up against the side of the house and make a big ugly splash, we can do that. If you want me to go outside in the cold in my bare feet, you know, and run me around the block in my bare feet, you know, you can do that if you want to, you know, make a concoction in the kitchen and make me sample it, you know, with all this horrible stuff in it. I have to because it's special time. So you can throw out some really wonky ideas there and, you know, maybe she'll pick one up. Most likely not, but it helps to sort of say the gate is open and, really, you don't want to structure this. You really want the ideas to come from her. She'll have some sooner or later. It just may take her a little while.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for being here.
Hi. My question is that I have two daughters. They're 7 and 10, and I'm somewhat new at this. I've been trying to go in this direction of parenting, kind of struggling with it for the last few years, I would say. Sometimes they'll ask me, you know, and now that they're more involved in school, basically, how do I explain to them the difference and why I changed? And also, you know, because they have friends that get grounded and they say, do we do grounded? You know, do you do grounded? And I say, no. And I kind of fumble through explaining it to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, I'm somewhere in limbo right now, and I'm
okay.
Just having trouble.
I do understand. So I don't have a spiel for this, but just off the top of my head, I would say, I know that you are really, really smart, and I know that you have a really good heart, and I know that I want to be, you know, really able to understand you now and throughout our whole lives. And I don't think that doing things to you is going to help us understand one another. You know, I think you're way smarter than that. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to let you know when I think a limit needs to be set. And I'm going to listen to everything you have to tell me about that. And we're going to work it out together. Sometimes my limits are going to be absolute because of safety issues that I think are really important. And I'm going to make mistakes when I do this, but I'm going to do my best to honor your intelligence, and I'm going to do my best to try to understand how you feel about every issue that's really important that comes between us. And I will just leave it at that.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
You know, that's kind of the heart of it, really, is I care about you, I know you're smart, and I want to listen. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
Hi. I just have been having difficulty. I work out of my house, and I'm a writer, and sometimes I'll say to the kids, I have twins, they're six-year-old twins, and I'll say to them, I need to do some writing now, and they always come in and bother me. And what I've just been doing is I just forget the writing, and then I just kind of do what they want, and then I end up not really parenting well and sort of resenting them.
yeah.
And I try consequences. It doesn't work. So what I've been doing now is just kind of, okay, I won't work at all. And then, of course, that's been hard, too.
Yeah. I think what I can tell you is at 6 years old, children's ability to feel connected without a grown-up replenishing that connection, you know, pretty frequently is limited. So, you know, you're kind of in a place where you could get help. You know, you could find somebody in the neighborhood or, you know, teenager who likes kids, who would be willing to play with your children or, you know, to come over. Just finding someone who can help out is one solution. And another one might be the 5 minutes in and 15 minutes out solution, where you fairly frequently replenish the connection, you know. Mm-hmm. So you're in and you play for 5 minutes, and then you have a timer, and where you have a signal. It's like, when I have my hat on, that's when you guys need to play. When I have my hat off, you know, that's when I'm available and I really want to be with you. But it is very difficult for children to not feel like they need you when you are physically present. It's like,
okay,
there are big sort of reservoirs of "I need my mommy" inside
right.
of every child. And the sight of mommy, you know, the sight of mommy brings that reservoir to the fore.
Okay.
So they can play by themselves when you're not in sight, you know, and not available.
Yeah.
But when you are, it re-stimulates those feelings of need, and a child is not, you know, they are bees to honey, and you're the honey.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Your attention is the honey. So I think it's not a workable expectation to think that they would be able to play by themselves for long periods of time without
okay.
your attention.
Okay.
And I'm sorry about that, but they will be able to, but at 6 years old, it's still hard to do that. And the thing that will help, the thing that will extend their ability to be independent of you is doing special time to increase the emotional safety in the relationship, and then getting one-on-one time, making sure that it's one-on-one time with each of them. And
yeah.
when they feel like they miss their sister, their sibling, and they want the other one there, you allow them to cry about, no, you know, your sister can't come with us. Or after they've had special time with you and you're going back into the family situation, when they explode because all of a sudden, you know, they're not the only one anymore, for you to stay with. And it's like, there are going to be times when the issue of separation comes up, either on reuniting with the whole family after special time, or, you know, you've just given them special time and all of a sudden they hate the way you cut their sandwich and they're all over the kitchen floor crying and tantruming because you did it wrong. That's a sign that the safety that the special time built is now allowing them to be, you know, upset with you or upset with sharing you. They
mm-hmm.
will show you this, and if you can stay listen to each of them through that, it's going to lengthen. What it does is it reduces the amount of "I need my mommy" backup that there is inside of them, and increases their ability to play independently without feeling like they need you. So
mm-hmm.
the solution is kind of a long range one of using special time and stay listening to sort of, first of all, fill the cup, and second of all, listen to, you know, the gunk that they have stored there that they would like to unload.
Thank
does
you
that
so much,
Patty. Make sense? Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, yeah, it does. It's doesn't sound easy, but it makes sense.
it's you don't have to do it all tomorrow. You know?
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
And day by day, it's very satisfying. Once you see how peacefully blissful a child can be, once they feel you there, it actually becomes pretty rewarding to listen to a
mm-hmm.
child cry, because you just know the results at the end of it are going to be so much better than the morning you've been having with them. So,
right. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. I'm running over time, but I'm going to take one more question if you can make it brief.
My question was about drawing limits with the physical violence directed at me, and just what you, it doesn't feel right to me to what I've been doing. There's hitting that happens when we go to sleep. We all sleep in the same bed, me and my 2-3-year-old boys. And I'll say, if you keep hitting me or if you keep kicking me, I'm going to get up and walk away. And I've been having to do that almost every night
mm-hmm.
Quite a while. So I'm just, it feels a little bit different to me, the physical violence stuff. And I
okay.
know.
Okay.
So
yeah.
anyway, I just hear how you would do that, and I'm sure listening partnership about why that is such a trigger for me is probably one of it. But.
Yeah, yeah, that'll help. It'll help you relax a little bit to make sure that you remember that they are your good, sweet young boys instead of little devils. The other thing I want to say is that if you go onto our website and you go under support forum and you go under community and you click join a special topic group. We have a group for parents, Parenting by Connection, parents of multiples. And we have a lot of parents of twins, even a few parents of triplets that are part of, you know, people trying to understand Parenting by Connection. And you can it might be easy to find a listening partner there. That would be great. If you both show up there, you can find one another. So sort of quickly, here's what I would do. When children are physically aggressive, it means they're scared. And most likely this comes up at bedtime because there's a separation that's going to be happening. Like they're gonna separate from you and go to sleep. And this, for many young children, is pretty scary proposition. It's like they want to be glued to your body or glued to your presence, you know, 24/7. And the feelings around separation are big, and they're more intense for twins. And I think that might be because they've never been a separate person. You know, they've been squished up against somebody for 9 months as they developed. And then they come out, and all of a sudden that person isn't right up next to them the whole time. And they have a parent who can't pay full attention to them because their sibling is there. So there's a lot of stress around separation for twins. And so what I would do, if it's possible, is to get some very vigorous play going pretty much right before bed, like maybe after dinner for a half an hour or 40 minutes. I would play affection games, like I've got 100 kisses, I'm going to get to you, and you don't get up and walk around the house as your great big self. You get down on your hands and knees, and you sort of thump slowly towards them. Who can I get to kiss? I see your foot, here I come. You know, and they can laugh and hop away from you and help one another, and you can land a kiss here and land a kiss there, but you are ultimately, you know, you don't land anywhere near 100 kisses, but you get a lot of affection in. Or if you play Kimmy or You, you know, where I'm lonesome, I need a boy. Where can I find a boy so I won't be so, oh, there you are, Kimmy or You. And you go something after one child and they both scramble away. You just get laughter going and you figure out what lets them laugh the most. You do not tickle, because that's a way of, you know, exerting your power over your child, but that isn't particularly favorable to children. But play affection games, get as much laughter going and as much physical play going as you can. Lots of vigorous cuddles, and then they escape, and then you catch them again, and oh no, he got away. What am I going to do now? I guess I have to catch the other one. You know, and just goof around for half an hour, 40 minutes, and this will rev your children up, and most people go, oh no, this is the wrong thing to do right before bed. But what happens is that children are deeply reassured by lots of physical contact, and the chance to laugh allows them to feel connected with you, especially if you're offering lots of eye contact in the middle of the play. It allows them to feel like they're not separate, they're not so alone. And then when the fisticuffs begin in bed, just put your hands on their feet, you know, or put one leg over one child and one leg over the other one, so that you've got your legs handle their legs, and then you put one hand on the hands of one child and one hand on the hands of the other one. Just go, I can't let you do that. And you look at one for a minute, you know, while he cries, and you look at the other one for a minute while he cries, and you use as little physical restraint as possible to keep everybody safe. Maybe the other thing you can do is just move them, you know, far enough away so that they can kick and try to hurt, but they can't reach one another. So you just, you know, one hand on one boy's tummy and one hand on the other boy's tummy, and you just move them to different sides of the bed and let them thrash and let them cry and let them thrash and let them cry and just go, you are such good boys. I'm right here. I'm not going to let you hurt each other. I know you don't want to hurt each other. I'm going to stay right here and keep you safe. And then you just, you know, offer eye contact and you listen. I know it's hard. It gets hard at bedtime. I'm sorry it's hard. I'll keep you safe. Don't worry. And you just, you know, you just offer this perspective. I'll keep you safe. I'm right here. I know it's hard. I'll be with you. It's time to go to sleep. And let it all pour out. And with twins, it's hard. It's like, you know, two children crying at the same time for 10 minutes is enough to make you want your mommy so bad. But it is what they need. And if you don't have help, if you have help, you give one boy to your partner and you take the other one so that you're only having to deal with one child. But if you don't have help at that moment, then there you are, and they're doing the very best they can to get those bad feelings out of the way. And you bring the limit by restraining the arms, restraining the legs, and offering reassurance. You know they're good. It's time to go to sleep. There'll be more good times in the morning. You're not going to let them hurt each other. And you just make a little mantra and say it and say it and say it until they can relax and fall asleep. And you'll have two boys who are bright-eyed and bushy-tailed the next day and really ready for a good day, I think. Does that make some sense?
It does, yeah. The way that you put things is just so beautiful. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah, sure. They are good boys. They are good boys. They collect lots of little feelings all through the day, and they cannot go to sleep without letting somebody know about all those feelings. And that's, and it's scary to have to go to sleep sitting on top of, a big pile of little upsets, that happen not because life is bad, but just because they're little, and it's not all easy. So thanks for hanging in. I'm going to close our teleconference here. What I will say is that we are a nonprofit organization. We depend on donations in order to be able to do these telecasts. We really want to help parents to reach out and bring really advanced and very, very effective listening tools to parents everywhere. And we can't do that without help from people like you who appreciate what we do, who like our ideas, who benefit from them, and who want other parents to benefit from them as well. So if you want to go on our website and click the donate button, we're happy to take, $5 or $50 or whatever it is you can spare. It would help us out a lot. There's lots of resources on our website. We hope you'll come back for another podcast soon. And if you really want help figuring these listening tools out and someone to show you how listening goes, get involved in our Building Emotional Understanding course. It's 6 evenings with a mentor whose children have done all the things that your children are doing and probably more, who has used listening partnerships to good effect and who really loves parents and wants to listen to you, wants to be your mentor, wants more than anything else to help parents be able to love their children well. And so those are the kind of folks we have teaching our classes. We would love for you to join one of our classes and get some help learning listening tools. They will stand you in good stead for the rest of your life with your child. So thank you for coming. I'm glad you've been here, and I hope it's been helpful. And those of you that didn't get your questions answered, go on to our, join our discussion group. And it's under support forum. It says discussion group. We have lots of people asking and answering one another's questions there, and we'd like to be able to help. Take care. Thank you for all you do for your children. Good night.
Thanks for joining us. Hand in Hand is here to help you get the support you need for your work as a parent. To download podcasts on additional parenting topics, go to handinhandparenting.org/store. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.